Well, the Proctor's Key Private Bank Broadway series has been unveiled, and it is a doozy. It includes An American in Paris, The Sound of Music, and Cabaret, among six touring musicals. Capitol Rep's slate of original productions will consist of five shows, from a tribute to Janis Joplin to an adaptation of Homer's Iliad. In another first, an offering on Capitol Rep's season Beautiful, the Carol King musical will be presented by Proctor's and will be a touring show, not an original production mounted by Capitol Rep. Subscribers to either theater will have the option of adding tickets to the touring production of Wicked, returning to Proctor's for 2 weeks in March of 2017. There is a lot going on, and we welcome CEO Philip Morris to tell us more. Philip, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, I love it, Joe. Thanks. Anytime.
Well, let's talk about, first of all, you know, when you, you're sitting there, you're watching a movie, and they say, and it'll be around the holidays, and it'll say, coming in spring of 2017, you think to yourself, boy, I hope I'm alive then, you know. You have to work on this stuff a long way out.
Oh, we actually have all of, not all, but almost all of 17, 18 done.
Wow.
I mean, it is kind of remarkable. Part of that is because with the governor and the legislature approving this upstate theater tax credit, which happened 2 years ago,
yep,
there's demand for the upstate theaters to be the first in the country to do the teching. So now if you think about it, if you're an agent and you're the person trying to book the 80 or 90 weeks of An American Paris, you got to know where the first date is in order to book the rest of it.
Sure.
So they're hunting for those first dates, like American in Paris and Something Rotten, and they found us. So that's something they need to know way earlier than we ever were able to be in the game before.
So I feel like you're diminishing yourself here, in the sense of they found you. I also assume that you are out looking for this, that there is a part to say, hey, we're here and we're capable of doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly the credit helped. I mean, that's a huge piece of it. And that's statewide. And so they're going to be Neverland's going to be opening in Buffalo. I mean, so this is a statewide effort. Schenectady and the Capital Region have the advantage of location.
You're a quick train ride down and back to the city.
2 hour ride. So even if it's around designers who just want 4 days to see the lighting and then go back to their studios or back home, all that's pretty appealing. So our facility is great, our crew is great, and we've earned quite a reputation for being a great place to tech and be in residence for 5 weeks.
Okay, so first one is the technical question, and I just don't want to leave anybody out here. So just describe what teching is and the importance that is in the process. So you have a show, it's mounted on Broadway, it's very successful, and then they know there's going to be a tour. Then it has to become a touring show.
Correct.
So they need a place to work out the bugs, and you become that place.
Right. And making it a touring show is a big deal, because in New York, shows are built into the theaters.
Sure.
And now they have to be built so that they can be folded and collapsed and pushed into a truck. So what happens is, as a tech facility, all of those parts which are being designed now and being built over the summer, for example, for An American in Paris, will arrive, having never been seen before, in our loading dock. So first will come the lighting rigs and the sound rigs. We have lighting and sound, but because some of the places that go on the tour do not, they will tech theirs.
Yes.
So our lighting and sound comes down, their lighting and sound goes up, stuff that we wouldn't normally use, but again, they have to tech it. Then once that's all up in the air, that takes alone a week, then come the set pieces, and they get assembled. They're coming in parts, and they're being built for the first time. And then they're figuring out how they fold so they can go back in the truck, because there's a plan and a design for that, but to make sure all those things work. And then all that happens. Then the costumes arrive. And then 2 weeks before the first night of performance in our building, the cast will arrive, because they'll be rehearsing in New York for a couple of weeks. And then they'll arrive and they'll see their costumes for the first time, and they'll have the lighting for the first time, and the cues will be the first time. Everything will be first time, and they'll practice that until opening.
Does that take away from anything that you would be doing, in the sense of that you can't have events that night because you're working? I mean, does that ever become a detriment to what you do?
Yeah, there's definitely – we probably couldn't logically or fairly to the community do more than two of these a year. The fall one is great if they arrive in the last week in August and open the first week in October, because September's kind of a slow month for people. People still want to be outside.
Yes.
So that works pretty well. American in Paris couldn't do that, so they're stretched through September into October. A little bit later than would be perfect, but it's okay because we're ecstatic to have the show open here.
Right.
A winter one is also difficult because January and February are busy and good months for the theater. But in this particular case, Something Rotten wanted to come in 3 days before Christmas. It was actually a time we didn't have program, and it meant eating up 3-4 weeks of January, but it looked like the right thing to do. And again, the show's funny and—
Oh, it's so great. It's
so
great.
Great. It's great. Smart that it was too hard to resist. It was like, yeah, we'll make that work.
Do the average theater goer, the average person who is a Proctor's patron, is a subscriber and is taking advantage of subscriptions, which you can do right now, we should note, do they notice that kind of thing? I mean, it's great for you guys and it's really cool in the industry, but whether they show up or they've done it beforehand, does that matter?
I think from a subscriber's point of view, it makes virtually no difference.
Yes.
Where the differences show are our ability to communicate with a lot of people about what the show's about, because the cast and crew are there and available to talk about it, not just coming on the air, but we try to do a gala and we'll have a guest come from American in Paris for the gala, and there suddenly there's somebody who's talking about the visual effects of an American in Paris, the video projection effects, and they're spectacular, and 150 people will listen to that and be kind of amazed. Plus, this year we're starting something that we tested last year when Gentleman's Guide was here. Mm-hmm. We're building a 5-day education program, 1 day a week, for high school students, coordinated with BOCES, so it's academically viable, that the students will get to watch, talk to designers, talk to crew, do some hands-on work, really be intimate with teching. And it's meant for high school juniors and seniors. And there's no place else on the planet where you're going to get those 5 days. I mean,
right.
It's just not going to happen. And the companies are willing to do it. You know, they get that it's different, but they also get that we have a strong commitment to education, and they want young people to see the opportunity in the creative industries. So they're willing to make that happen, and it's going to be kind of neat. There'll be 20 kids who are going to have kind of an experience of a lifetime this fall.
And the other thing, I guess, and I'm going to go back on what I just said, of virtually no difference to the average subscriber or to theater goer. But one of the things I guess is awesome is that you're at the beginning of the tour, so people don't have to wait longer. It almost seems, because in my mind, American in Paris just opened. Something Rotten just opened. And the idea that just a few months later it's at Proctor's in Schenectady, that's really cool.
Curious Incident of the Dog.
Right.
5-6 years ago, we would have been at the back end of those tours.
Right.
No question about it. We would have had those tours a year from now or 2 years from now.
I was just looking, like, Spamalot opened in 2004. You had it in 2008 or something like that. I mean, so that's a long... That's a fairly long time. I think it took 2 years for it to tour. So then, you know, you're 2 years into the tour before you get it. And now it's immediate. So that's very cool.
Right, because we have 3 shows running in New York that are going to be in our building next year. You know, so that's kind of amazing.
Does that ever hurt, by the way?
I don't think it hurts New York at all.
Well, no, I'm more worried about you.
I don't think so, because I suppose if someone doesn't like what they saw, if they went to Rotten and went, you know, that was childish, they're not going to come. Okay. I mean, that might happen. But if they went to Rotten and loved it as you did, you're likely to tell your friends, look, I don't want to see it a second time, but you got to go see it.
Absolutely.
And I think that that's especially for us, because so many people from the Capital Region see New York as part of their lifestyle, you know, different than a Buffalo probably.
Right.
And when I lived in Buffalo, coming to New York was a big one time a year thing. And many people will take the train, go spend a weekend 3 or 4 times a year. So I actually think the word of mouth piece is positive for us, not negative.
your role, talk a little bit about what this all means, not only for Proctor's but for Cap Rep, and just your role in theater in New York and upstate and what's emerging.
There's kind of a couple different answers. When we aligned with Cap Rep, what we're doing this year by announcing our seasons together and by having them have a crisscross, if you're a Proctor subscriber, you're going to be able to pick one of the rep shows to go to. If you're, as you said, a subscriber at Cap Rep, one of the shows will be at Proctor's, is around the notion that we are the professional theater of the Capital Region. There are some other equity things like, you know, the dinner theater in Glens Falls. It's not that we're the only equity, but we are together, the professional theater. In our case, Proctor's, it's stuff that tours,
yeah,
that we present. That's the language in the business. In the case of our case at Cap Rep, we're producers. We're creating the work. And those two things together, there's only three other places in the country that do that, that have presenting and producing all in the same wheelhouse. And those places end up being priority places for producers and new theater and new work to be thought about and considered. So I'm hoping it's going to take time. All this stuff takes time. But this year's season announcement will surprise some people. It hits the mail this week. Because the two are together, because there's world premieres at Cap Rep, that's based on our commitment to a new play festival, a next act that is 3 years in a row now. We've done a next acts festival, picked our favorite show, and produced it. One of them, God Game, had a real life in other Lort theaters, League of Resident Theater Companies, the Equity Theater Coalition, about 50 theaters in the country. It's had a real life in other Lort theaters, and that's fabulous. That's the relationship we want with New York.
Forgive me for being crass. Is that good for bragging rights? Is that, or do you get money for that too?
It's mostly bragging rights, except when someone decides that they want to enhance a production. That's the language of, I have an idea, I want to do it out of town before I move it to New York, but I want it to be good enough that some of the parts can come with me to New York. We've had that happen at Cap Rep once, and we would then be the world premiere with, you know, maybe $3 or $4.5 million of enhancements, so that the Capital Region audience would see something they might not otherwise see.
Right.
And then that goes to the city. And in those cases, there might be a chance for a half point or a little tiny bit of money that's residual. You know, there's some opportunity,
sure,
but it's not huge.
No, but hey, you'll
exactly
take it, right?
And you never know, because it could be a chorus line.
Yes.
In which case, that little half percent could be a lot
of
money.
It becomes really huge.
Right.
Do you get it seems, at least in my opinion, that this has always been a wonderful community for the arts. We've always done it seems like we've always had wonderful opportunities here. How have you seen a change over your time, and what do you see developing here of an arts community that is yes, some way tied to the city, related to the city, but also can do its own thing and thrive?
Well, the amazing thing in the last year and a half was the study on the creative industries of the Capital Region, which unwrapped that creative work, defined reasonably broadly, but, you know, not stupidly broadly, design, film, theater, music, not food, you know, not those sorts of creative industries, but that electronic games, the creative industries were the sixth largest employer, right behind by like 50 jobs, universities. So there are almost 30,000 jobs in the Capital Region that are tied to the creative industry. That makes us the second highest percentage of creative workers in the country of an MSA of about our size, which is remarkable. Most people would go, I don't get it. We in the industry get it because there's things that we know that most people don't know, like Adirondack Scenic Studios in Argyle, New York, builds all the rides for Disney internationally.
Yes.
You know, like Vicarious Vision is, you know, not just Guitar Hero, but a continuous rollout of electronic games and employ people in music and visual arts and all kinds of creative sides, not just technology sides, to deliver those games.
Right.
And when you think about them all together, and in fact, this coming Friday, a second meeting of the largest employers in the creative industries is coming together to talk about what it takes to do this work in the Capital Region and what it takes to attract and retain employees, because this is an opportunity for growth here, partially because of our relationship to New York and because we have more rooted seed than most people think. Does that answer that?
I think it does. It does answer it. I was at Proctor's on Saturday night to see the Breakfast Club Molly Ringwald event, which was great. But what I thought was really cool is that you have all your theaters and they're all running. I mean, there's an audience going here, there's an audience going there. You've got upstairs, downstairs, all around town, and not to mention what's happening at Cap Rap in Albany. So there's a lot of plates spinning. And the fact that you're able to do that is defying the odds a little bit, isn't it?
I don't know if it's defying the odds as much as it is growing with place. So as the Capital Region has come to envelop technologies in new ways, think of the changes that, you know, have happened on Fuller Road and up at Malta. I mean, they're kind of remarkable. I think we, the creative industries, and we, Proctors and our enterprises, including UPH now at Saratoga, are keeping up with that.
Upstate,
right?
Preservation Hall, we should
add. Yeah, Universal Preservation.
Are
keeping pace with that, right? If the creative industries and if the entertainment and arts world don't keep pace, then how on earth are you going to attract the kind of employees and businesses that all the rest of it needs to have? So is it kind of against the odds? Yeah, maybe a little bit, and maybe a little bit sequential.
The common sense is there. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I was on, I remember, a panel 15 years ago where we were talking about Tech Valley and coming and what this was going to mean for the arts and what this was going to bring. And so on paper, it all looks good. But then for it to actually happen, that's good.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. And some of it's probably surprising. I mean, I think it's surprising some of it happened in Schenectady. It's probably surprising that Cap Rep's even still here. I mean, some of it's surprising. But I actually think the community has stepped up and said, we want this.
Can you become too big? Can Proctors as an entity become too powerful when it is taking on entities such as Capital Rep and other organizations that come under its umbrella? And I don't mean because there's two ways of looking at it. That if I'm an arts organization and I'm getting ready, I'm having a tough time, and I look to you and I say, oh, can you help us? How can you help us? How can we work together? How can this? Or do you think of it as it becomes too big, too unwieldy, and it blocks out other entities to do their own thing? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. I don't have a, you know, if I were a consultant coming to the community, I don't have a sort of packaged answer. Scale means a lot, and in the arts world especially, rarely is there an organization that has enough scale to deliver certain things. So the fact that at this point we're of a scale that we might be able to deliver some things that would be unusual is probably good for the community. Could it go too far? Yeah, probably. At the same time, we try to be extraordinary collaborators. We provide the infrastructure for ticketing for 8 or 9 other organizations. You don't even know it. And that's okay. We don't care. We don't even want to tell you who they are. But we can make it less expensive, easier, deal with the technology, and be the back end for them. And that's great. We're happy to do that. So we're happy to assist organizations in their development. And we have tons of those kinds of relationships. So I think as long as we have an attitude like that, we're probably not too big. And once we lose that, we probably are.
Someday I just want to ask you about, we're out of time, but someday I just want to ask you about the ticketing, because you have always amazed me. Proctor's has always amazed me in being able to not become a part of that whole alternative ticketing plan that seems to be evil.
we're one of the few in the country.
I know, and how you're able to do it and still that, good for you. I'm more than a little impressed. So here are some of the shows: An American in Paris, Dirty Dancing, the classic story on stage, The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime, Something Rotten, Sound of Music, Roundabout Theater Company's Cabaret. I've seen all these shows. These are all amazing shows, and of course Wicked, which has its roots right here in the Capital Region as well. So,
and then for Cap Rep, Janis Joplin, Outside Mullingar, a Irish play that has a happy ending.
Show. Yes. Rare.
Camelot, Reluctant Wigman, which is a world premiere that we did in our Next Act Festival last year. As you said, an Iliad. A beautiful rendition of it with cello. It's just spectacular. And beautiful, the Carol King musical.
It's all great stuff. And, of course, subscriptions. People can find out about that. They can find out about how they can get their tickets early and
call
the
box office, 346-6204, or wait till you get the brochure.
Right. You'll see the brochure. Great. As always, it's proctors.org for more information, proctors.org. Phil Morris is the CEO of Proctors. It's always a great pleasure to have you on this program. Thank you for all your great work and for the terrific collaboration that you oversee in this region.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.